All right, this morning we're going to continue our study in the book of Matthew, and today's big idea, so I just want to throw it out there really quickly. Today's big idea is this, that the Christian life is a life of carefully selected values. The Christian life is a life of carefully selected values, values of heavenly significance. Now, when I say heavenly, it doesn't mean like, okay, kind of the next world and what this happens in this world doesn't matter. No, no, no. You see, in Jesus' prayer from last week, he says, pray that the kingdom that happens in heaven would happen on earth too. Right? He's saying, let's have it happen right now too. Now, it doesn't happen perfectly, but it happens significantly, that we would take heavenly values and infuse them today and live them out and have them be what we're all about. So the Christian life, though, is a life of carefully selected values, and those values are of heavenly significance because, and this is maybe the key part, because the human heart is singular in nature. The human heart is singular in nature. In the human heart, two things cannot occupy the same spot at the same time. That's what Jesus is going to talk to us about today. And he's going to use one particular thing, and that's probably true no matter what it is that he talks about, but he's going to use a particular thing today to apply that in. But the human heart is singular in nature. Two things cannot occupy the same spot at the same time. Okay? So, let's see if we can jump into it and see what he has to say. Verse 19, chapter 6, we're going to go to verses 19 to 24. It's only five verses here. But we'll see, okay, what does he have to say? And so in 19, he switches topics and he says, hey, you guys, do not lay up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moth and rust destroy, where thieves break in and steal. I'll tell you guys, when we're going to talk about this, this seems to me, it almost hit me as like, well, yeah, duh, yeah, of course, yeah, right, okay, let's move on. In our culture, like, I don't know if I really want to talk about this. I'm not sure it feels all that important. Okay, it's a nice thing to say, Jesus. For sure, it's got some value to it. It's probably really right, but I'm really busy. So let's move on to the next subject, okay? But maybe not so fast, right? So he says, do not lay up for yourselves. So let's stop here. This verb, do not lay up, here's what it means. Theorizo is the Greek verb. It's a verb. Don't lay up. Don't do these things. Don't lay up for yourselves. And what it means is this, is to lay aside treasure, to build up, to accumulate wealth, to accumulate stuff for the day of a future security. Okay, he says, so we all do that, right? Of course. Diane and I went to Costco yesterday because we stored up for ourselves food for this coming week or two or whatever, you know? We collected a lot of stuff for a long time. It's the nature of Costco, right? As opposed to going to Schnucks or Dierbergs or whatever. But don't store up for yourselves treasures. Now let's go to the word treasures. The word there is thesaurus. Sounds like a thesaurus. Exactly where we get the word thesaurus from. Because a thesaurus is a place where you store precious words, right? Synonyms is what a thesaurus is all about. We store up precious words. If you're a language arts teacher here this morning, you love me today, right now, because I'm talking about precious words, and because every language arts teacher has a dictionary on their desk and a thesaurus, right? Because of the richness of language. But a thesaurus is this. It is a storehouse of precious things, a receptacle of valuables, even relating to thoughts stored up in the mind and the heart. So he says, do not lay up for yourselves treasures on earth. So this is the key. Let's just kind of box it. Things on earth. Now what he's talking about here is material goods on the most part. And so he's going to address the issue of wealth and how we kind of approach it. And so he says, don't lay up for yourself treasures on earth. Now, I got to be honest with you, as I thought about addressing this, there is a conflict that happens in me, is to think, what do you say to an American culture? What do you say to a West County culture that probably has significantly higher wealth than much of our region. What do you say in America that has significant wealth more than lots and lots of the world? We are clearly a first world nation. There are second world nations. There are third world nations. How does this play as compared to those that we interact with on the Saline in Ansagale on the island of Laganov in the country of Haiti? People who have almost nothing. How does this play? Would Jesus say the same thing to them? And on one level, I want to say no. He wouldn't even say this to them. But the reality is, the more I've gotten to know them, is yes, he would say this to them. Because no matter how much there is available, whether it be a lot like we have, I mean, you go to Costco and like, there's a lot available, right? I mean, it's like stunning. It's a warehouse. I mean, there's stuff everywhere, you know? But you go to Haiti, there's very little. But there are stuff. And they want to accumulate them also. Now, maybe not at the level we do, but there is this tendency in the human heart is still the same in a poor environment and in a rich one. So he says, do not lay up for yourselves treasures on earth where moth and rust can destroy, where thieves break in and steal. We get it. And so I want to ask a question here just for a second. Let's ask this one. What are you strategically accumulating? What are you strategically accumulating and depending on that is vulnerable to political, economic, relational, or natural disaster? Have you ever thought about that? What are you relying on? What are you depending on? What are you accumulating that could be taken really easily? A moth would come in and eat it. Rust would destroy it. Political upheaval might take it all away. Economic, for those in the Great Depression and in the fall, many had so much, and they lost it overnight. Relational, even natural disasters. What would you lose? What are you depending on that you could lose so easily? What are you depending on that you can't lose? But what are you depending on that you could lose so easily? I remember one time back when I was living in California, I was supposed to go to a breakfast meeting with Don Hodel, who was the Secretary of the Interior under President Reagan. And so I was invited to a breakfast meeting. It was really early at the Marriott by the airport in Los Angeles. And so I got up really early, and Diane wasn't going, so I got dressed without the lights on. But when you go to be with Don Hodel, who's the Secretary of the Interior, you might want to dress up. And so I put on my, it was wintertime, and so I put on my really nice brown wool pants, and I had a nice sport coat and tie. I looked good. But it was dark, right? Until I arrived at the meeting at the Marriott, and I noticed that a moth had eaten holes in the front of my pants. And those white under things were showing through. That was embarrassing. So I walked around the whole morning, kind of like this. Hi. You know, pulling my jacket down. Where moth and rust destroy. What are you depending on that so easily happens? What are you strategically accumulating? You know, it's amazing how fast stuff can grab us, isn't it? It doesn't mean it's wrong to have stuff. Sometimes God has blessed some people with more than other people. But does it grab their heart? Does it take over the interior of someone's life? That's really the question. So let's go on. Look at verse 20. But, so he's gonna let's circle that. We always do that here. But rather than doing verse 19, he says, let's do verse 20. But lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor rust destroys, and where thieves do not break in and steal. And you think, well, okay, what are those treasures of heaven? And you think, well, what's going to be in heaven? What's treasured there? There's really only a few things that are going to last past this world. My house isn't going to. It's going to fall, maybe sooner than later sometimes when the wind blows. What's going to last? It is God's word and people. And qualitatively, the people, the way we interact with them, it's going to last. It's like, wow. He says, lay up for yourself treasures in heaven. The same activity of building up, of laying aside treasure, thesaurizo, and the sorrows. He says, do that. And do it in heaven. Now, let me ask a question again here. What are you strategically accumulating and depending on that is not vulnerable to political, economic, relational, or natural disaster? What are you really storing up? What are you investing in? It's going to last forever. It's so easy to get filled with all the stuff of this world. Now, are we responsible to have a job, make a living, and do all the things? Yes, we are. You know, and in America, it's complicated, right? You got to have insurance on insurance. I mean, you're paying all that stuff left, right, and over the top, and there's taxes and this and that, and it gets complicated. It is not as complicated as that in Loganov. It's not quite as complicated as what we live with. But really, they still have all the same pressures and all the same temptations that we have here today. So what are you strategically accumulating that is not going to get destroyed? That matter right here on earth, right now, today, this week, this month, what matters? Where are you investing? What are you doing? Well, because here, look at verse 21. For where your treasure is, there will your heart be also. It's true, isn't it? Of course it is. What you treasure deep down is where you're in your heart is what's going to be lived out. What do you treasure down deep down in there? It's a really great question. Now, Jesus is going to say the same thing again here in a second, except in a little bit different way. Look at verse 22. The eye is the lamp of the body. Now, what that means is it's a focus that reveals the inner motivations and values of the heart. For the Jewish people, your eye was the critical thing. And now, some believe that your eye created some sort of light that exposed exterior to you. But most of them believed that the eye was simply an illuminating factor to the inside of you. And so what you would focus on with your eye metaphorically then revealed what's going on the inside of a human being. So here he says, the eye is a lamp of the body. So if your eye is healthy, your whole body will be full of light. Where you focus matters what goes on the inside of you. And your whole body will be full of light. Look at this, but, circle it. But if your eye is bad, if your focus is bad, if your focus is on what it ought not to be on, look at this, what happens. For your eye is bad, your whole body will be full of darkness. And it means that your whole life will be influenced by what you focus on, and it will be full of darkness. And I think all of us probably have done this at some point in some way, and still probably do it. And here we get to that place where you go, man, I don't even like this. It's dark. It's worthless. I've pursued what isn't valuable. I remember talking to the chairman of the elder board at a church that I worked at in Colorado. And one day he said, you know, I don't even like myself. And he wasn't, you know, like falling apart. He just had recognized, man, I can be such a knucklehead. I can be so... He just went, man, I don't even like me. Because he, in a sense, what he'd been focusing on made his whole body dark. And he kind of reached the place where he said, what am I doing? And he was one of the top executives with Kodak. He was one of the top people. He was making a ton of cash. And he was having a lot of fun. And he was doing a lot of stuff in life. But it had kind of overtaken him. And he just said, what am I doing? I'm not going to quit my job. I'm not going to do any of this. I need to change my focus. I've just gotten caught up in the things of this world, and they've taken over my heart. And the things of God and the things of man cannot occupy the same spot at the same time. And he recognized he had replaced the values of God with the values of the world. And he was so frustrated. And he's like, dadgummit, why did I do that? And he said, I got to make a change. Humanity changes heart, not just the exterior. Look at this. If your eye is bad, the whole body will be full of darkness. If then the light in you is dark or darkness, how great the darkness. How sad. How painful. How discouraging is what he's saying. How great is that darkness. Wow. Then Jesus makes this kind of culminating comment here. He says, no one can serve two masters. For either he will hate the one and love the other, or he will be devoted to the one and despise the other. You can't fill the same spot with two different things. It's impossible. And so Jesus makes this last comment. Let's box it. He says, you cannot serve God and money. The Greek word here is mammon. It means more than just cash. It means possessions or property. The stuff of this world that all will burn. He goes, you can't serve them both at the same time. It's impossible. The human heart is singular in nature. It cannot have two things that occupy the same spot at the same time. Either you will hate the one and love the other, or you will love the other and hate the first. You can't do it. And so the question is, what are we doing with all that? So here's the big idea for today, I think. Jesus is saying that the Christian life is a life that is carefully selected values. And those values have a heavenly significance because the human heart is singular in nature. So where's our heart today? So we ask the question at the end of a lot of sermons is, so, therefore, what now? What do we do with this? Right? What do we do? So let me suggest that you've never or very seldom seen this. Right? Now, they did this for the picture. But you very seldom see a U-Haul behind a hearse, right? I mean, it just doesn't happen because we know it's not going with you, you know? It's going to stay in the U-Haul. And so you think, okay, what am I really giving my life to? If it's not going with me, what am I doing here? Now, that's not always true for everybody's worldview, right? Let me just show you this. If you were reading the news this week, they discovered 30 new coffins in Egypt of people who have been dead 3,000 years. It's a long time. And so in their worldview, when death happened that many years ago, there were three things that were critical to happen. One was the embalming of the body, the mummification of the body, because they believed that if you didn't have a body, you couldn't get into heaven. There was not going to be an afterlife. So they preserved the human body. They wrapped it up. They made sure that it was preserved. They put it in these really cool either stone or wooden coffins, and they've lasted 3,000 years. These things are like amazing, and they believed that. Secondly, there were some religious rituals that had to happen in order to send you into the afterlife, and as you went to the afterlife, you needed to take some things with you, and so especially for the rich in Egypt, they would bury them with all sorts of stuff, right, and a lot of stuff. In fact, sometimes thousands of articles of stuff ranging from furniture to food to cosmetics to games, everything that you would store in your house in order to do life, they would store in their tombs. So because into the afterlife, you needed to take some things with you. You needed some food. You probably needed some makeup if you were a little bit on the older side, you know, for the guys. And not the gals, because they don't need it, but the guys would need it. And there'd be some games they need to play along the way. And so they would take that with them. So they'd fill this stuff with stuff for the afterlife. They filled not only what they had in this world, but thinking it would serve them in the next. So in a sense, they did attach a U-Haul to their hearse, right? They did, okay? So, but it doesn't really work. Jesus is saying, don't fill your life with that here. Don't have it take the primary spot in your heart. But fill your heart with the things of heaven. The things that last, the things that matter. Fill your heart with that. And then all the material goods that you get in this world, you'll use them correctly. You'll use them effectively. Warren Buffett, who's at times been the richest man in the world several different times, he's still one of the richest people in the world, he's decided that really he frankly wants to give away his fortunes before he dies. He's already given away a third of it, most of it to the Gates Foundation, but he's like, hey, it's not going with me. I might as well invest this stuff. And he decided that Bill Gates, Bill and Melinda Gates, were investing better than he was investing in kind of things that were going to last. And so he gave a lot of it to them. He's also giving millions and millions of dollars away because he's getting older. He's going to die. And he's basically said to his kids, you're not going to get all of it because you'll just waste it anyway. I know my brother, his father-in-law, who was a pretty accomplished guy in Northern California. He went to his family and he said, "Hey, I just want you to know, you guys are doing pretty well. Great job. And when I die, you're not getting a dime. I'm giving it all away. Because you guys are doing fine. And so good luck. You know, I hope it goes well. But I'm going to give it away." And he gave away a ton of money as he's passed away. Because he knew it wasn't going with him. He wanted to invest it in making a difference. And his family was doing well. Great. Good job, guys. And keep working. And I'm going to give it away. He gave most of it, or a bunch of it, to Mount Hermon, which is a Christian camp in Northern California. Because he says, "Man, I want to make a difference in the lives of young people for another 50 years. Because I believe in what goes on in the Christian camp for kids." I think, wow, isn't that incredible? So here, let me just kind of finish with this. So therefore, what now? Here's those three questions. What are you focusing on? What's your eye focused on? Because whatever it's focused on will fill your heart. What are you focused on in life? Is it things of eternity, things that matter? Lives of people, God's word and his truth? Or is it just the stuff of life that eventually become dark? Your whole body becomes dark. What are you focusing on? Secondly, what are you filling your life with? Your time, everything that you do, what are you filling it with? What are you doing with it? Are you investing in things that matter? Or is it all real self-oriented? And third, what is competing with God for your heart? You ever think like that? Your heart is being, people are competing for it. The world is competing for your heart. What is competing with your heart? What's attracting you? What's pulling you? Maybe it's your own bitterness. Maybe it's your own stuff of life, the disappointment that you have. Or maybe it's just a self-oriented, I'm just going to do my thing, I'm going to rebel. Or maybe it's trying to accumulate things. What's competing with God? Now, you guys, it's not that he doesn't want us to have stuff. Of course, we live in a culture, if you don't own a car, it's tough to live. You know, I'd say move to Sofia, Bulgaria. I mean, you can live on public transit, no problem. Here, that's pretty hard to do. You know, unless you have a best friend as an Uber driver, and then you're pretty good, you know. But, man, there's some just requirements to live in America. That's hard. But what's filling you? What's competing for your heart? There are all sorts of things that compete. And sometimes it's just my own selfish self, my own selfish desires. So I find this passage to be somewhat painful, to be honest with you. Think about it, all the things that I've tried to collect over the years that I thought were so important. I can go right back into high school and remember the time that I thought this one pair of saddle shoes, I couldn't live without them. How stupid, right? But man, were they cool. They were a good-looking pair of saddle shoes. They were $100. I was in high school. I was working. It's like, I'm going to get those things. And I got them. And I wore them like 3 times, and they hurt my feet. Those are the dumbest shoes I ever had. It's like, what a waste. My eye was so focused on something that actually was just dark and dumb. What did I do that for? How often I've done that in my life. What's competing with God for your heart? I don't know what it is, but I think it's worth asking, worth answering, and worth doing something about. So on your seats, there's a card that says, "Treasures, Matthew 6:19-24, and ask 4 questions. And we've been doing this every week, and I don't know if you've been doing it, but I think it's worth doing, right? What do you need to wrestle with in regards to this issue of your heart? And what are you filling it with? What do you need to do about it? And how willing are you to do it? You go, well, I need to do this, but I'm not going to do it. I don't want to change. Or like, I'm medium. Or I'm not sure. Or like, Yeah, I need to do something. What is it you're going to do? And is there any other scripture that comes to mind? Because when you take God's word and place it in your heart, things begin to change. What do you need to do with that? So I encourage you, take that card, fill it out, wrestle with it. Because these issues are really important in life. Because Jesus is saying the human heart is singular in nature. Two things cannot occupy it at the same time. What is it that you've given it to? And is it the stuff of this world? Or is it the stuff of heaven? So we're going to let you wrestle with that a little bit. Okay? So let's just take a minute. And maybe you could just sit there and ponder it a little bit. Pray. Think about it. Okay?